This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It is Wake Up Call, hour number two. We got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up. We'll get more back into the NFL as week 14 is done. Don't forget, we have top five, bottom five coming up in hour number three. And we'll also, in hour number three, talk to the Detroit Lions play-by-play announcer as their season has really had a nice resurgence of late. So we'll talk a little bit about that coming up in hour three. Over the weekend, I watched a lot of the Alabama-Houston college basketball game. Houston, the number one team in the country at the time. Alabama was in the top 10, I think it was like 11 or 10 or something. Anyway, the Alabama upset Houston. And I know a lot of people don't get rolling with college basketball until conference play starts, and maybe even not until like February to go, all right, what exactly is going on in college basketball? Because the tournament is so big, it's so vast, it you know, takes up a lot of teams, so you don't feel like there's a sense of urgency in the sport. But I was really interested in the game because living in the South, I've always appreciated the SEC for its football, but over the last decade or so, I've really seen an effort from this conference to be on a level of basketball that I've never really noticed before. Yet, Arkansas in 40 minutes of hell with Nolan Richardson, Mississippi State had some good teams. Kentucky's always been good. Vanderbilt at times had pretty good teams. Florida won a couple of national championships. I'm not talking about individual schools that have been putting an effort into college basketball. That's happened, and that happens in every conference. I'm talking about as a conference effort to make the facilities a lot better, to be able to recruit really top talent across the board in the conference, and getting stellar coaches to come to play, to come to football-oriented schools. And Nate Oates, who did a fantastic job at Buffalo, has done a great job at Alabama, a absolutely great job at Alabama. There are three exciting coaches in the SEC that I don't think people are paying a lot of attention to. Obviously, there's John Calipari up there, of course, but I think there's three that I really, really, really like. And one of them is Nate Oates. I think he's absolutely fantastic. Eric Musselman has obviously done a great job at Arkansas and whatnot. And, you know, you can throw in Calipari and whatnot. Mississippi State's doing a very, very good job, too. But obviously, I think the third one for me is Bruce Pearl at Auburn. Now, Bruce Pearl definitely has a legacy going in from when he was a coach at Tennessee. But scandal aside, he's gone to Auburn and really has put that program back on the college basketball map. Congratulations to Nate Oates. I know a lot of people aren't paying huge attention to these kind of things early in the season. That was a good win against Houston.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
The good, the bad, and the dumb. Tuesday edition. Again, top five, bottom five coming up next hour. But good, the bad, and the dumb. This hour, what is the good of the day?
Good of the day. It's got to go to Nelson Aguilar.
Nelson Aguilar did a great job last night.
He did a great thing last night. If you didn't miss it, because you know, maybe you didn't tune into the first quarter of the Patriots Cardinals, but during that, in the first quarter, Devontae Parker, his teammate, went for a pass. He ended up dropping it, but got drilled and got to his feet. It was a little wobbly when he's trying to get set at the line. Nelson Aguilar was the only one on the field that realized, you know, there's something wrong with my teammate right now, and I need to get him off the field. And it turned out that Devontae was suffering from a concussion.
Absolutely. It was totally missed by the spotters that only job is to spot these kind of things. And it was totally missed, and Nelson Aguilar did a great, great thing.
I mean,
great
last night. He got them to stop the clock. Yep. Got them to, you know, say, hey, ref, get this man off the field. And as soon as they blew the whistle, Nelson immediately went over there and like, no, I'm walking you off the field. Let's go.
It's incredible we don't see more of that. A lot of it is because the spotters do catch it, but I he was the only player that noticed that, right?
No one had. People were oblivious, I think.
And here's the other thing, and don't discount this, guys, because I know it's you know, competitive and these guys want to beat each other, but they're all brothers within the union. I'm surprised even another Cardinal player didn't even notice it. They all are together on this concussion thing. It's the one thing the union stands in unison together is they always feel like they're not being taken care of. In terms of concussions, they want better concussion protocol. They want better spots on this. And so the league did, after Tua's situation, started putting these concussion spotters, and it was totally missed and totally missed. And it was missed by the Patriot players, except for one. Except for one guy. So great for him for noticing.
Because I think they immediately went to a no huddle, right?
Yeah, that was part of the problem. That was part of the problem. So I'm not going to give it to Arizona because they didn't want to stop it. I mean, they didn't want to stop play. But
like, go ahead, throw it to them again.
Yeah, they were right. Yeah, exactly. But I'm surprised you don't see that more and more where, you know,
it's got to be tough for a teammate, too.
Even in a normal play.
Kick your butt out of the game.
Yeah, exactly. But even in a normal game, right, like just a normal setting, just an average third down play, first down play, you know, with 12 minutes on the clock in the first quarter. You don't see a lot of opposing. You don't see like the Lawrence Taylor screaming at the sidelines to get somebody on the field. You know, you don't see that very often. You were like, I know I just killed this guy's leg. And so I think that what he did was going to open the eyes of the NFL. Like, man, we got to do a better job of this because we can't be all talk and no action. But maybe it was a legitimate miss, and that and those things happen. But it doesn't matter. Nelson Aguilar did a great job. So that is a very, very good good. All right, so then what's the bad of the day?
If you weren't tired of Packers drama.
Yeah. Never tired of Packers drama.
No, there could be more coming.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
Because the rumors that are circulating in and around Green Bay, Milwaukee, the greater Wisconsin area, is that Jordan Love is fed up with sitting behind Aaron Rodgers and expected to seek a trade this upcoming offseason.
You know, I would too, man. But at the same time, who is this true? Because I saw Mike Florio say, I don't know if
this is according to Packers insider Jason Wild, who said it during an interview on the Homer and Tony show for ESPN.
Okay.
Milwaukee.
I gotcha.
Homer and Tony show could be our new name.
That's right. Ah, that's right. Very nice.
Of course, I'm Tony.
That's right. I'll give you top billing, Homer. There you go.
When I first saw this, I was like, I'm not surprised. I mean, you look at the last – just look at college football, for example, right? If a quarterback isn't getting what he feels is his fair share, he enters the transfer portal. Or not just a quarterback, any player.
Right, any player.
You know, I want to go where I can be playing and I can play and I can be seen and, you know, I get some tape and make it to the next level. Why can't – I mean, we see it with NFL players, but rarely do we see it with, like, quarterbacks, backup quarterbacks, where they're like, I'm gone. I'm out of here.
I never want to spoil the fun argument. I always find myself, whenever I hear a little more of the old-timers talking about this, where they're like, they sort of believe in this pie-in-the-sky notion that everybody is about team and everybody is selfless and they're all about – just doing what's right for the organization. And I always go, would you do that with your company? Like, would you do that in your career? Like, equivalent.
It's coming.
Whatever equivalent that I can take from, let's say, just using the Jordan Love situation, to your business, would you do it? Like, if you knew you were young and you're full of ideas and you knew you felt like you could do a really good job, would you just wait around and wait around and wait around without saying a word, without pursuing other opportunities? Would you just stay at company X forever? If you knew company Y and D and B could pay you more money and you could have a more prominent role within your industry, like, stop pretending like Jordan Love should just keep his mouth shut and sit around and wait 10 years until they figure out what they want to do with Aaron Rodgers.
The other issue I see with this, too, is that this is becoming like almost like a Packers thing.
Yeah.
And that's a terrible, terrible thing to be. You know, they've done it. This is to be, what, their second time now with a quarterback where aging superstar gets a contract extension. He's going to be playing. Why wouldn't Aaron Rodgers play until 2024?
I
don't see them benching him anytime soon.
No, who thought that this was going to end well? Like, who picking Jordan Love in the first round thought this was going to work out perfectly? You're asking a guy to do nothing but be on the bench for a Hall of Fame superstar that's not going anywhere, that the team doesn't want to have go anywhere.
Yeah.
Right? And then that guy is supposed to sit around and go, yeah, one day I'll get it. He was a first round pick. Whether he deserved it or not, you can argue that. But he's looking at this going, what am I supposed to do? Just sit around and do nothing for my career and waste my 20s? My early 20s?
Yeah. When's he going to get his first start?
Like,
when he's 32?
Like, it's not your career. Like, you can sit in the stands, drink your beer, and say tell me to be quiet, but you're not the one that is worked his tail off to pursue a dream. It's not his fault he was drafted by a dysfunctional organization that couldn't figure out its quarterback situation with a Hall of Famer. He should have been rightfully picked wherever he was supposed to go, whether he was a second-round selection or late first-round selection. However you judge him, he should have gone to a team that needed him. They don't need him. And I don't blame him one bit.
I don't either.
One bit.
But the only issue that I have with it, where it is the bad, is that I'm kind of sick of Packers drama.
Oh, God. It needs centers, yeah.
It's, you know, it's going to rear its ugly head.
Why
because
is
let's face
there
it,
drama?
I mean, let's face it. The offseason for the Packers starts now.
Why is there drama with this? It's like Aaron Rodgers is a magnet towards it, isn't it? It's like.
Well, you know what's funny, though?
You're a starting quarterback. You're a Hall of Famer. Just play football. If you have a good years, bad years, it doesn't matter. Just play football. And why is it that I feel like everything around Green Bay is a mess?
Yeah, I think I'm thinking two things here, right? I'm thinking one, wouldn't the Packers organization know this road? They've already been down it
They've
once
before. They've already been down it, yeah.
And wouldn't Aaron Rodgers also have some sympathy towards this whole thing? Saying, hey, man, I get it. I know exactly how you feel. Because that was Aaron.
Exactly.
And there's no sympathy. Aaron's just like, you know, he's, you know, just sitting there taking ayahuasca, driving the Packers down into the ground.
What was the, remember how, like, they say the president always leaves a note for the other president?
Yeah.
Right? Didn't Ted Thompson leave a note for Brian Gutekunst when he said, here's the things that I learned in my tenure at Green Bay. Don't do these things.
Yeah.
Right?
When you're a quarterback, your aging quarterback, you'll know when he's reached his limit. You make the change.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know who took over the Packers job in 2017 when he left. By the way, Ted Thompson passed away. I totally forgot about that a couple years ago. But nevertheless, he should have left a note saying, "Here's what I wouldn't do down the road."
Kind of like the presidential book.
Right, the presidential book. Exactly.
Have a Packers
God,
book.
That's amazing, but. Again, Jordan Love, I don't blame him one second.
I don't either.
You can't give away this stuff. Because, again, think about the work that it takes to get to that level and then just to have it be, like, just thrown away and you're just backup quarterback role, knowing. You're not. Here's the thing. And it's not even that you're waiting. It's not a situation where you're battling with another guy that is on the is iffy. You know what I mean? Like, Aaron Rodgers is not going to lose his starting job. The Packers are not going to come out and go, yeah, we're benching Aaron Rodgers. That's not happening. So you're not even waiting for him to play badly enough for you to get the gig. You only get the gig when he retires.
Yep.
That's awful.
Oh. Or injured.
Or injured, right. And that's what
and that's a horrible position to be in, hope that guy in front of you gets maimed so hard
exactly.
that he can't play.
Exactly. All right, what's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day has to go to the U.S. men's national team.
Tell me more about this.
Okay. Now, I'm going to start off by saying it this way. We should be celebrating what the U.S. men's national team accomplished at this World Cup. It was a great thing. This is a young team. They made it to the knockout stage. Fantastic. Had a hard-fought game against the Netherlands. Just came up on the wrong side and defensively, found some major glaring holes on the defensive side. That's the soccer part of it all. We get back a few days after they're out from the World Cup, and we have this drama between Greg Berhalter and, for a while, unnamed player. And now we know that the unnamed player was Gio Reyna, which is one of the reasons why he didn't play really at all during the World Cup, even though he's one of the more prolific attackers the U.S. men's national team has. So the way that this started was off the record, Greg Berhalter had said to a reporter, listen, we had to tell a certain player that because of his attitude during training, during his, the lead up to the World Cup, because of the attitude he had, the effort that he was putting in, he's going to have an extremely limited role. And now this reporter went forth with the info. I don't know why. Because it was off the record, and it turns out that it was Gio Reyna, and Gio Reyna responded to it by, saying he apologized for his behavior, but he wished that this was kept in a locker room, which it should have been.
That was my takeaway, was it felt like Gio Reyna's point was, yeah, I was kind of told everything that's in-house stays in-house, but I guess that's not true.
Yeah.
Like, I guess we're just going to throw me under the bus.
Now you pretty much, you have two sides doing the he said, she said argument, airing dirty laundry of the U.S. men's national team, which is not needed. Again, yeah, we should be celebrating their accomplishments this past World Cup. They did a great job, and there was a lot of great players. I don't need to know, you know, how much, if Gio Reyna was a diva or, you know, did this or that. I don't need to know, you know, that the dumbest thing I can't was that, you know, Greg Berhalter went on to say that he went to his team, they went to Gio Reyna's team, and then it was the players that had the meeting.
Mm. And then why do we know any of this?
Yeah, then you hear these reports that it was like, well, you know, because they were about to kick him off the team, but it was, the vote came down, it was 13-12. I'm like, well, we don't need to know that half the team didn't like Gio and the other half was fine with him. Yeah. You don't need to know any of that stuff.
So in the end, whose fault is this? Is this Greg Berhalter's fault for not nipping all of this stuff in the bud and going, eh?
Well, I mean, for sharing it in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
he shouldn't have done any of that.
Yeah, I mean, yes, it's off the record, but listen, if a reporter has a really juicy story and is trying to keep his name in the paper because he's covering soccer, and let's face it, soccer's not going to move the headlines,
yeah,
he's probably going to share it.
You know, and here's the other thing, too. And coaches, they fall victim to this because we're all human, is that in the end, there are people that will say, I want to tell you something, but I can't tell you something, but I'm going to imply some things just to get a little heat off of me, right? They don't want to, like, you'll see this in college a lot, where they don't want to blame, they're not going to blame the kids, that's not right, right? But they just answer the question in a way to make you go, yeah, it really was Joe Smith's fault for that fumble at the goal line. Like, it makes you, instead of a coach saying, all of this is on me, blah, 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 they just don't, they can't, there's a lot of ego, there's a lot of humble bragging almost, there's almost like deflection. They know they can't come out, and I wonder if Berhalter is like doing that in a way just to go, oh, yeah, but I was also dealing with this, but I don't want to get into it, but yeah, just to let you take a little bit, so you go this way while he goes this way, the other way. And I think that always backfires because you're right. A reporter is just going to jump in on that and go, well, I'm going to find out more. Why not? Let me ask some questions. I'm pretty tight with this group. Let me ask some questions of the right people. And you dig and you dig a little bit, and so you know you find what you're looking for. It's stupid strategy.
Yep.
Because some people are like bulldogs, man. They're going to get all over this.
And that's what's happened. I mean, this thing spread like wildfire.
Yeah, but you're right. I mean, we should be like, all right, can't wait for the World Cup in 4 years when it's here in the North America. But
Started looking forward to 2026. Yeah. I mean, looking forward to this team because most of this team, probably minus one player now, I guess.
Can I ask a question about I'll ask a question coming back because we're a little
okay.
But I'm going to ask a soccer question when we come back. All right, it's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, I got to get into this Chris Beard story, but before I do, I got a soccer question for Ron.
Fire away.
The mess. So the 2026 FIFA World Cup will be taking place in Canada, Mexico, and the United States.
Correct.
So the three countries got together and they said, we're going to do a joint bid. We're going
to
do a bid
together. Guarantee it's coming here.
Is that why? Why didn't the United States go, I love you two, you guys are great neighbors, but I think we're going to pursue this by ourselves? Like, why did the United States feel like it had to grab in Mexico and Canada to this bid? Is it because they felt like on its own it wouldn't win it?
For Canada and Mexico, yeah.
Yeah.
They don't have the infrastructure. I mean, Canada hosted the Women's World Cup a couple of years back, but there aren't as many teams in the Women's World Cup.
Right.
And part of the other reason is that, you know, that favorite term we love to use in college football, basketball, they are expanding the playoffs, basically.
Got it. All right.
So right now, the way the World Cup's been has been a 32-team tournament. I believe they're increasing it to 48.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. So so
they needed the extra places to go.
Did the World Cup people, did they say FIFA? Did they go, hey, U.S., if you really want this, pony, grab those two other countries?
No, I think it was. I don't think it was really.
Why did the United States go FIFA? Why can't we do it all?
The U.S. probably could, but I think they.
They probably could.
We know they could. You know, to be honest,
like if it's in Qatar, it could be in the United States.
Yeah. I mean, if it's in Qatar, it could be in Connecticut.
Yeah, it could be in Liechtenstein. I don't know. I mean, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
You could have the entire tournament in Connecticut at this point.
Exactly.
But I think it was, you know, it was like, I guess it's almost like a celebration of this region.
Gotcha.
In a way. So it's like, you know, let's have it in Canada. Let's have it in Mexico. And really, it's the only way that Canada and Mexico would ever sniff at hosting the Men's World Cup. Now, having said that, Mexico did host the World Cup in 1986 themselves. But that was, you know, that might as well be like a million years from ago.
So, all right. So would you, like, if you were in Atlanta, for example, and they go, hey, group stages will be in Atlanta. You just get a group and that's what you watch, or they don't fly you? Do they fly you all over the place?
Oh yeah, like, yeah. So yeah, you don't get the same group.
You'll never get the same group. So a team could play in Los Angeles in a group game, and then their next group game could be in Dallas.
Correct.
Okay, that makes sense.
That was the weird thing in Brazil because
there was one in the jungle.
Yeah, but it turned out the U.S. was traveling the most out of any team because they played in Rio. They played in. What was that jungle team, like city, Mana or whatever?
Yeah, the
it was.
One that was in like the middle of the Amazon.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and they played
that was
there
wild.
And they played, you know, and then they played in the capital city. So, I mean, it was all these different places. And that's part of the, I guess, the experience and something that you didn't really have to suffer too much from.
No, that sounds great. I mean, that's the way I'd want it to be. I would think that if you had to play matches. Like, if you, you know, I think you would want
now,
to be
I
like,
will,
let's go around.
I will assume one thing, and this is the only assumption I'm going to make, that during the group stage, because the host country makes it no matter what. So you will have Canada, Mexico, United States are in the 2026 World Cup. And I'm going to assume that Canada, all Canada's games will be in Canada, all the United States games will be in the U.S., Mexico will be in Mexico during the group stage.
Right.
Okay. Once you get to the knockout stage, if they're fortunate enough to make it, then I think it's, you know, hey, all bets are off. We're going to put you where we put you.
I got you. Okay.
But I would be surprised if, like, Canada, all of a sudden, like, Canada's playing a game in Mexico.
All right. So this would be fun.
Because I know when the only other time we've had a joint World Cup was Japan-South Korea, which made a lot of sense. But Japan played all their games in Japan. South Korea played all their games in South Korea during the group stage.
That's great. All right. So I was just curious because I thought the United States would be like, look, guys, I mean, you guys are piggybacking on us.
And it totally is because the ratio of games, if you want to know this part too, the ratio of games, because in total there's going to be 80 games. 60 of them will be in the United States, 10 in Canada, 10 in Mexico.
Oh, that's good.
So we do have the bulk of the games.
And Mexico, they've hosted this like three or four times, haven't they, in the history of the World Cup?
I think, no, only once.
Only other once?
Yeah, only in 1986.
Oh, okay.
And for the U.S., the only time was in 1994, but now we got it in 2026. Well, but yeah,
can you imagine if they gave it just to Canada? I think we'd be like, ugh!
You couldn't. They don't. I don't think they have enough to go around.
Well, they could say, you know, we can build them like Qatar.
They don't have Qatari money.
You know what I mean? Like Justin Trudeau could just tax them a lot more and go, we'll just build more.
And there is one other problem, Tony. I think Canadians, they abide by the rules.
Yeah, I'm sure they do.
They're not going to work people to death.
Exactly. So these stadiums, like, so some of them are like could be domes, and I know it's got to be grass field, but there's a way to like would they have to keep them open in the rain and stuff, like make sure that Mercedes-Benz Stadium isn't like, well, we'll close it.
I'm really curious about that. Because
like if you're playing at MetLife Stadium, too bad. But if you're playing in Atlanta, we can close it up for this game.
Because another rule, which I thought was a thing, and I'll have to check on this, but I thought games always had to be played on grass.
Yeah, I would assume that that's the case.
They would have to
put some grass. I think they do. Do they not for the Atlanta United in Mercedes-Benz Stadium?
I think so, but I also know it's at NRG. I mean, there's a couple dome stadiums that these games are going to be held in.
They might have to keep the roof open.
Yeah.
If they can. So, nevertheless. All right, so there you go. All right, I'll get to the Chris Beard story when we come back. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
All right, thank you. Thanks for joining us on Twitter at Tony D Radio at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's, please. This Chris Beard story is a little disturbing. He has been suspended by Texas after he was arrested early Monday morning on a felony family violence charge. The woman who told the police he strangled her and bit her, she says she is his fiance. They got into an argument, said that she was strangled for up to 5 seconds and couldn't breathe, that he just snapped on her and became super violent. Police came to the house. They arrested him. Now the university is looking into it. He arrived to Murray. This is his alma mater. He had taken Texas. 5 years he was at Texas Tech. He led them to the finals. You know, they lost to Virginia. 2019, but then he left for his alma mater, and he's been at Texas, and now I don't know what they're going to do with this story, but it's kind of disturbing. She told the police that he choked her from behind with his arm around her neck, and she couldn't breathe for 5 seconds, and then had some bite marks on her and bruises up and down her leg. Now, his lawyer, of course, is saying completely innocent, should have never been arrested. What do they always say, that if the police come to your house after with a disturbance, somebody's going home, somebody's going away with them? Like if there's a spousal fight or a fight within a house, it doesn't have to be spousal. So I want to take that back. But let's say two people in a house get violent and they call the police. Somebody's leaving with the police. Whatever happens is whatever happens. But the police don't just go and they go, "Oh, you guys good?
Okay.
Yeah, you guys are cool. All right, we're leaving. All right, that's okay. Bye." You go, "Oh, no, it was just a fight." You especially when it's between, like, spouses. Like, if somebody calls, and husband and wife, or in this case, fiance, if there's a, you know, man and a woman, and the cops are called, someone's going with them. So there's no surprise that Chris Beard left. But when the lawyer says he was innocent, it might be innocent, but he got arrested for a reason. Like, he got arrested because there was a phone call made. When they got there, there was enough to see, "Hey, you're going with us." But they're going with you anyway, because they got to separate the two parties. They're not going to have it come back on them that, you know, it got even more out of hand after they left. So, but it's very, very disturbing. Beard was posted a $10,000 bond. And if you're the university in this day and age, this might be it for Chris Beard. That's just kind of the way it goes these days. And they played Rice last night, and they won in overtime. They're one of the top teams in the country. But this is one of those situations where you may not be able to survive the story, even if the story comes out that maybe there was a lot less to this than initially reported. Maybe there's more to this than initially reported. I don't know what the story is. I don't know. I wasn't there, and I didn't file the police report, and I wasn't in on the phone call. The only thing I'm getting is what is being reported. So maybe there's less to this. Does Chris Beard survive it? It's very hard to survive it, right? These public universities, especially public universities, have to take these matters a little bit bigger than just maybe a private business. But I know people in private business who have lost their jobs for things like this. You don't even have to get the story finished before you're done. So Texas has got a situation on their hands where they might want to keep Chris Beard, but they probably can't keep Chris Beard because of this. And we'll see where this goes. But, man, it is really, really disturbing.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, it was somewhat confusing yesterday because, I mean, it was all over the news here. And, you know, Texas was taking their sweet time levying a decision.
Yeah.
Just kind of dragging their feet. It's like, you know, they have a game in an hour. We don't know who's coaching.
The first thing they should have done is said, you know, maybe they don't like the optics. I get it, right? Maybe they're just like, "Well, we don't want to jump to conclusions. We don't know what's happening here." Because, again, I hate to say this, but you have to be kind of at this level when you're doing an investigation. You want to make sure everybody is telling this accurate story. You don't.
Yeah. I don't think we would have faulted anyone had they said, "Hey, you know what? For tonight,
exactly.
You're not coaching. We're pending further investigation."
Exactly.
We hear that term all the time.
Immediately, there should have been. All right. Look. He's being suspended, but we're not making any judgments because, again, we don't know the story. We don't know. We're taking her word for it, but we have no idea. We have
or just
no
simply
idea
the fact
anything.
That he got arrested.
Right. The fact that they got arrested just, because they came to the house and there was enough for the police to say, you're coming with us. Because, again, that's what police do when they go to a domestic disturbance is they separate the two parties. But, again, he was arrested on a felony charge. Now, if you're the university, you got to say, okay, we got that. So we got a game tonight. He's been suspended until we know more. But you're right. They took a while before they made that. What was he going to do? Coach last night after posting bond?
And you don't want that as a university,
right?
I mean, what are the guys going to talk about? Are they really going to talk basketball? Anytime there's a break in the game, just a reminder, he was arrested earlier today.
It's terrible optics because again, you do that and then you go and then you let this play out the way it plays out. And if you find out there's no there, you reinstate him and go. But if there is, then you come back and you go, all right, it's this is a situation we gotta take care of it, right? I mean, it is incredible, absolutely incredible. But again, this is where universities have to sort of say, okay, we have to at least make a statement. We don't want to go overboard because we don't want to be a university that is, making big judgments or making big statements on judgments on stories we don't really know. That's the one angle to this that I think you have to be careful of if you're in a school administrator is you need to say, look, we don't want to set a precedent that we make statements about a person's future without a thorough investigation or letting it play out. You have to let it play out. But it does not look good for Chris Beard. It does not look, based on reports on what's happening, it does not look good for Chris Beard. Again, I'm holding out that the story changes, but as of today, when I was reading that, I was like, whoa, you're not surviving it, right? If this is true, he's not surviving this. You can't.
Yeah, no, he's done.
You can't. You're done.
He's done.
That's it.
Now, he will coach again. Now,
of course. Seems
but
to be the case.
Texas.
But not at Texas. Not at Texas. It is a pretty pretty awful. All right, I want to get to this other thing too. So I'm a cynical guy when it comes to media because I've been in the media my whole life. I'm a little cynical than a lot of other people. I understand how the game is played. I understand that there's a lot of people out there that no matter what they need to do, they need to get clicks and videos watched no matter what it is, and that's fine. Sometimes I see antics on TV that are real, and sometimes I know that it's not, that it's been drummed up and faked. So Skip Bayless and Shannon Sharp got into it yesterday on that talking show that they do. What is it? I don't even know what it's first. That's on First Take, is it?
Shannon and Skip.
Shannon and Skip.
I don't know what it's called.
Anyway, I didn't watch it. I just saw the video of it on social media. But I did watch the video on social media, and
because it was everywhere,
right? And this is what these shows do, right? That if you're a producer of these kind of programs, right? If you want to get fired immediately, go into the meeting and say, "I'd like both of you to have a nice, civil, and polite discussion on the topics at hand." Where you both agree with each other at times and maybe politely disagree with each other at times. That's how you can get fired in that business. No, you go in there and go, it would be great if you did this and you did this and we get fired up. That's why you see a lot of animation in those type of shows. You ever watch one of those shows and go, golly, that guy is way too fired up about that topic because they don't really have much to talk about. And it's like, is Baker Mayfield a top tier quarterback? And somebody's like melting down over this where you're like, that's what the purpose of the show for. It's entertainment. So you want to get people that can be passionate on anything at any moment. And Skip Bayless does a good job at that.
All right, real quick. Listener Philip chimed in. They're on Undisputed.
They're on Undisputed. Thank you. Cause I get those shows confused. Thank you, Philip. Appreciate it.
Yeah, they all sound the same.
I know. They are. I'm sorry. How many ways can you title those kind of shows? but I got a feeling that was real. I got a feeling that was real. I got a feeling that Skip Bayless went too far and didn't realize how far he went when he told Shannon Sharp or implied to Shannon Sharp that Tom Brady at 45, that Shannon Sharp should have been a 45-year-old tight end in the league. Because Tom Brady was able to play longer than him. And I think that was real when Sharp was like, hey, wait a minute, hold on. I'm in the Hall of Fame. And I think Skip went to a place that he probably, knowing him and knowing he probably knew where he was going, but I think sometimes he probably didn't realize how far he crossed when he was making the point about, because Shannon Sharpe was criticizing Tom Brady. Okay. And one of the things that I always kind of hate when I'm in an argument with somebody, if I'm debating somebody, let's say, and I'm saying, if I say such and such a golfer is not as good as things, right? Like if I say, oh, I think that Jordan Spieth is not as good as Justin Thomas, right? And somebody goes, oh, you're crazy. Jordan Spieth won the Masters and the British Open and the U.S. Open. And I go, yeah, but Justin Thomas is this, 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 and this. And Spieth had this, this, and this. And then the argument comes down to, well, he's better than you. Well, that's not an argument. That's not a debate. That's not a legitimate debate. But in this case, Skip Bayless wasn't talking to some schlub like me who didn't play professional ball. He was talking to an NFL player. He's talking to an NFL player with his own career, his own statistics, his own accomplishments, winning three Super Bowl championships and earning a Hall of Fame award. So Skip wasn't going down the, hey, you just sit on a bar all day. You're not as good as Tom Brady. He was talking to an NFL player, a former NFL player. And attacking that in comparison to Tom Brady, Sharp made a point that said, wait, because I don't have the same career as Tom Brady, I can't say anything about the way he's playing today. Skip Bayless should have known better. That's not a good way to make a point. But Bayless doesn't care because what's in it for him? What's in it for him is people, making noise of the show, promoting show, doing what we're doing right now, talking about that moment. That's his overall goal. But that moment where he told Shannon Sharpe to put his glasses back on, I was like, uh-oh. I thought they were going to get in a fight. I thought he was going to cross the table and punch him. It was getting that heated. But I'm a cynical guy. I've told you guys this before. I think a lot of stuff is staged. I didn't think this one was. Maybe it was. I don't know. I don't think it was. I think that they were having a legitimate conversation about Brady's effectiveness. And I think Skip went to that lazy place that you go in arguments when you don't have anything else to say. If you're losing an argument, what do people do? They get personal, right? When you lose the argument, that's when people get personal. So if I'm making a case about something and something and something, and somebody says, well, they're a better NFL player than you, I've won the argument. I've won because you had to go to a place where there's nothing else to back up your claim other than attack the guy on the other side of the table. And I think that's what Skip did. There was no business, if you're having a legitimate conversation on Brady's effectiveness, to look at the guy across the way and say he had a better career than you. That's unfair. It's unfair. And Sharp, who plays a completely different position with more physical, it's a more physical position, had every right to say that crossed the line. Guy went to the Hall of Fame and he's being told it was irrelevant because he didn't play until he was 45 years old. Playing a position that is designed to get, designed not to be hit in the ways he was hit catching footballs. Now, granted, I mean, what Brady has done is an amazing thing. It's an incredible thing. Look, regardless of what position you play in the National Football League, I don't care if you're a punter where you're never hit. You play to 45, you're keeping yourself in shape, and you're holding off competition. That's the key thing, right? Brady has had... We know it. We said this. How many times did you and I say this? That when Brady leaves, it better be on his terms, because if it's not, it could be on somebody else's terms. Even Brady. You can't. This league does not allow you to play till whenever you want to stop. Right? You have to figure out if you want to leave on your terms, you have to figure out where that line is and hope to God no team you're on and the rest of the league thinks it's behind you. You have to catch it before it catches you. Brady has been able to sustain a level of playability in this league at 42, 43, 44, 45, right? In order to hold back the young generation that is coming up that can throw the ball a little better than he is, or is a little more mobile, or a little bit more this, or a little bit more that, or younger, or whatever. That's an accomplishment. To criticize somebody else, to tell another player that shame on them for not equaling something that only one player has done in the history of the league, play quarterback at 45 in modern times, I think was a very low blow. And I think it was said in a way that, I mean, again, probably in Skip Bayless's brain, it was like appropriate. I think in a lot of other people, it was one of those moments where I went, oh, shoot. I shouldn't have said that. But, we'll, you know, so nevertheless, that made its rounds yesterday. All right, it is Wake Up Call again on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. We continue.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
One other coaching note, Mike Leach is still in critical condition in a Mississippi hospital in Jackson. When we were on yesterday, it was health crisis, but we didn't know what it was. And then the Clarion Ledger came out later on in the day and said massive heart attack. So Mike Leach has some problems. That's too bad. I get a little nervous with Twitter because this is where I'm getting this kind of news on a quick basis, and it does well. Guess what? Now it's coming down that Mike Leach has passed away. That is now just 48 seconds ago. Mississippi State football has tweeted out that Mike Leach has passed away. That is devastating news. It's one of the good coaches in college football. That is too bad. Prayers for his family, the death of Mike Leach, Mississippi State. All right, we'll continue hour three coming up as we continue with Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.